So, you're rolling, Leslie?
Yes.
Are we ready to go?
Yes.
Right now, it feels like I might be interviewed by the cops or something.
Where are you on this?
Isn't it true?
Isn't it true?
I told you about that retreat thing I was involved in this year, right?
Yeah, your spiritual, you went to like a monastery.
No, man. It was...
It was like a Tracheus thing.
Yeah, I was telling you about, you know, where the guys were washing our feet and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all that.
Yeah.
And then, so...
Is that weird?
It is weird.
Yeah.
You know? and then when... So, like in March, I was on the receiving side of it. Mm-hmm. So they were washing my feet.
Yeah.
In September... I was on the presenting side of it.
Wow.
And so I washed their feet. And I ended up doing...
You wear gloves or no?
No.
Disinfecting soap, I hope.
I ended up doing my witness in front of all these people.
Really?
You know, it was like a prepared presentation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had a speechwriter help and everything.
Let me ask you this. What experience was more impactful? Having your feet washed or washing someone's feet?
Doing the service.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, then it's the whole experience of the biblical, you know, act.
Right.
You know what I mean? And what Jesus, was representing there, you know, which is he's God, but he's a servant, you know?
Yeah. Washing feet.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't you guys introduce me? My name is Christian. And I'm the host of this amazing show, and sitting with me are two guys who I would say are on the front lines of battling this epidemic, the opiate epidemic, drug addiction, alcoholism. And first off, I thank you guys for your service, and it really is a service. And so why don't you guys introduce yourselves. And
I'm Paul, and I'm the owner of 365 Sober Living.
Yeah.
I've been in recovery myself for 7.5 years.
Right.
And Daddy and I have recognized a problem, you know, in this area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are out to do whatever we can to help people, you know. Yeah.
Danny.
My name is Danny, and I'm the program director of 365 Sober Living.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an honor, it's a privilege. You know, a lot of people get paid, and you look forward to a paycheck every week, and I get paid every day. Mm-hmm. It's priceless when I see the change of the fellows, of changing their lives, and then reuniting with their family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a paycheck in itself.
Wow.
And that's how I get paid.
All right.
You know, I love it.
Yeah. And then I imagine you've dealt with addiction in your own personal story?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I got a story in itself, and I should not even be here, even talking to you right now.
Wow.
Many, many times where, you know, didn't have the will to live.
Yeah.
I wake up every day mad and angry at God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why am I still alive?
Yeah.
I don't want to be. You know? And many times where I came to a point where I tried God in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. If he was still there.
Yeah.
And just plenty of times of even wanting to take my own life. And just different things intervened where I'm still here today.
Wow.
And I look back at all those things that I have, went through. And there's a reason why I'm here. You know? And the way I look at it is in order for me to live, I have to give it back.
Yeah.
And that's what I do.
Amen. Yeah, I echo that. I mean, I think when I connect with people is when it makes all the crap of life worth it, right? Because sometimes, you know, doing other things to get paid. And then when you connect with somebody, it's like, okay, that's why. Or I think I got a call recently, somebody in the middle of it. And I took the call and we just talked about it. And I didn't do anything special. And I hung up the phone and I just thought to myself, man, that's why I'm clean. That's why I'm not using, is right there, to have that conversation, to be able to have it authentically and for real, right? I gotta stay clean to be able to do that, And it is. It makes it worth it for
Absolutely.
Me. Yeah. So everybody's talked about it. It's been in the media. President's talked about it. Macklemore has done a really amazing song. I think it's called Drug Dealer. And so this is not like a hidden thing as much as maybe it was in the past, this opiate epidemic here in America. But I think it's not always told from kind of the front lines, which is what you guys are dealing with it every day. And so I went through and I found a bunch of stats. There's a lot of information, a lot of it's from 2014 because they're still collecting stats up to date. Can you guys tell me a little bit about, it's called the Triangle here in Alpharetta, Georgia, and what that is?
It's three municipalities here, Alpharetta, Johns Creek, Roswell, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's been going on is, the incidence of heroin addiction is, shooting through the roof mm-hmm. in this area. Okay. We see it, in the evidence and in the rooms.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're talking about the rooms. You mean like in your guys' in the programs that you guys are running?
No, well, in our network.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. In our recovery network,
mm-hmm.
With our clients,
mm-hmm.
okay, a good portion of them are addicted to heroin.
So what would you say the percentage of the guys that are in your program right now are opiate addicted?
What do you think?
I'd 50? Say about 98%.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I have never, when the crack epidemic came out in the 80s, mm-hmm. it was a real big deal.
Yeah.
And then over the years, now it's becoming the heroin now.
Yeah.
And it's being cut with fentanyl. Mm-hmm. It's another way of the drug dealers making more money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're cutting it and call it like a hot bag. We call it a hot bag.
Mm-hmm.
And, the sick thinking in addicts' mind is that, well, if somebody ODs, I want that bag of dope.
Right.
And what happens is they go for it. Well, they stay clean, abstinent for a while, and they think they use the same amount, and right. that same amount, they die.
Right. So your body builds up a tolerance as you're using the drug, any drug, anything, caffeine, and as you use the drug, your body builds a tolerance for it. So when they're in full-blown active addiction, they're using heroin, and maybe they're starting at a low dosage, and then as time goes on, their dosage has to increase to get back to that high they had when they first started. And then when they get clean, they, of course, stop using. And then for those guys that decide to go out and relapse, they go back out and they try and shoot up the same amount of dope that they were using when they quit, which could be 6 months ago or a year ago. And when they do that, their body has already kind of normalized, right?
Yeah.
Right? The physiology of the body is normalized. And so when that drug hits the system, the system's not ready for it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So these pill mills are basically doctors who have their medical license. And some of these things are like really big. Like they'll have locations nationwide. And then they get guys or girls or people to get out there in the streets and basically come to someone like you and say, hey man, I'll pay you $100. Give me your ID, go to see this doctor. You go see this doctor and they make up this fake, they have these fake MRIs, this fake X-ray on your back, right? And they say, well, his back messed up. I give you $100. You come out of the pharmacy with the pills. You give me the pills, and you're off, right? And then I'm gonna come track you down in a couple weeks to get you to do the same thing. And then I'm gonna take these pills, and I'm gonna sell them on the street for whatever, $20, $40 a pop, right? And so they're cracking down on this. And when they come knocking on your door, they're already ready to arrest you. They got all the evidence they need, right? And so when they're cracking down on these pill mills, it makes pills harder to get. mm-hmm. right? Initially, it was really easy to get pills. You just go to the doctor, man, my neck hurts, they prescribe you Vicodin. That's how I got hooked on Vicodin. I had a shoulder injury. So people are basically not able to get the pills, and so here comes heroin. First off, it's cheaper, right? You can buy a $10 baggie and get high. It's easier to get. You don't have to go through all the hoops of going to see a doctor and doing all this stuff. And so a lot of people who are in this socially acceptable taking these pills, right, they get addicted to the opiate, and then they're forced to make a decision, right? And of course, the next easiest thing is moving into heroin, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And from all walks of life now, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's not just you know, what you would typically, you know, like with alcoholics, you know, you always viewed them as, you know, the guy under the bridge.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's everywhere now, you know, and yeah, all walks of life. Right?
Don't yeah. discriminate.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Basically, it's being, it's having the degree and still being a drug dealer at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, the way I look at it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another way of getting high.
Yeah.
You know, legally, just like alcohol is legal.
Yeah.
You know? Let me get a prescription. Let me justify my mind saying it's okay because right. our doctor prescribed the medication.
Right.
And this is kind of, you know, it's kind of, I have mixed emotions about this
yeah.
type of, mm-hmm. you know, subject, because I come to find out more and more in recovery and working in the field of addiction that, you know, people get sent to detoxes. And with the insurance, you have the Subutex, Suboxone, and mm-hmm. so forth, and methadone,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, blind detox, you know. And what happens is while they're going through the detox, they're being detoxed off another opiate.
Right.
And what happens is because of the mind, the pleasure sensors in your brain of yeah. the feel good,
yeah.
they're detoxing off the opiates that are being detoxed with.
Right.
And what happens is in the addict's mind, well, I don't want to be sick.
Right.
I got sick one time.
Yeah.
I'm being medically detoxed
mm-hmm.
with another substance.
Yeah.
I don't want to get sick again.
Right.
So then here we go again. We're going to go cop some heroin, and yeah. we're going to get high.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on a lot right now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because the detoxes, you know, they don't give you the time necessary, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're just kind of churning them out, you know.
Right.
Right back out in the streets.
Right.
Okay?
Not dealing with the root issues and what's
right. I mean, they're not, issues. You know, they're not technically detoxed yet, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. With what they're using to mm-hmm. detox them.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, so your mind is still on the drug.
Right.
You know?
This needs to be treated and dealt with in a different way than you would, say, diabetes or hypertension.
The, you know, disease of addiction controls three things.
Okay.
Your mind, your body, and your spirit.
Yeah.
Okay? To the point when you get serious in your addiction,
mm-hmm.
that your spirit is void, is gone. Okay, so we have the capability of doing anything to get the drug, to get the money for the drug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where it creates havoc on our society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, you can relapse on your type 2 diabetes, you can relapse on your hypertension, okay, but you know, I'm not gonna get behind the wheel of a car and kill myself and somebody else.
High on sugar or yeah. steak.
Right.
Right.
You know, steak.
Yeah. yeah. Right.
You know, with the history of it, I mean, you know, when the early guys were working through the, you know, the problems with alcoholics, you know, in AA,
mm-hmm.
You know, the medical community didn't even label it a disease. They started that work in the 30s. Mm-hmm. Okay, they wrote the book in 1939, you know, right. published it.
Yeah.
Okay, it
wasn't about the AA big book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the early 50s mm-hmm. that the American Medical Association labeled it, you know, finally classified alcoholism as a disease.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, so we've got the, you know, stigma of you know, the substance. Okay, whether it be alcohol or drugs,
mm-hmm.
all right, and that still goes on, you know, till today, really.
Yeah.
Okay,
you're talking about like the guilt and the shame that comes around being addicted,
right? To right. treat people adequately, you've got to attack all three things.
Yeah.
Okay.
One thing is the body, right? So it's physically removing them from the substance,
right,
giving them an extended time. Detoxing is what you guys call that. And then the mind. How do you guys address that?
You know, when somebody comes in and let's say they're heroin addicted,
mm-hmm,
okay, you should see them, okay? They're lethargic. They sleep all the time. You know, they have no capability of working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we do is we say, you're not working for a while. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the money situation, you know, we'll work that out.
Right.
Okay? And then, so we'll give them a few weeks. We'll set them up with an IOP. We'll make sure that, you know, they've got a
What's an IOP?
Intensive outpatient program.
Okay.
You know, that's not... you know, they're sort of separate, say, than like a full residence treatment program,
mm-hmm,
you know. So we'll set them up with that, mm-hmm, and make sure that their day is full, okay?
Right.
All right? We're not going to send... We're not,
idle time, right? Idle hands, yeah. Devil's playground.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so we, you know, we keep them busy, you know, and we don't put the pressures on them of normal day life.
Okay.
You know, what Danny was able to do, okay, mm-hmm, is make that template, okay, between us, yeah, detox facilities and IOP programs.
Right.
Okay, we can now work together.
Now, you called that a closed loop.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And, you know, the concept behind that is that we do not throw people, we don't throw people away.
Okay.
Okay. If you're just coming into a sober living, the typical way a sober living without these other two parts, and you relapse, you are on the street, which is the
right,
worst place,
right,
for anybody in early recovery to be.
Right.
Okay.
So let's say if someone's addicted and they've decided, okay, I'm going to get help. Okay. What are their options? They have some sort of inpatient place, right, where they're going to go into a place like No Longer Bound, or where I went, Penfield Christian Homes, and it's going to be a kind of locked door kind of facility. You go in there, you're intensely in a program, you're separated from your outside influences, right? And so that would be an intensive inpatient program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also the option of what you guys have, sober living, which I guess would also be like halfway house or three quarter house, right?
Yeah.
Where you're still inside in society, you're still maybe going to school or you're going to work, but you have a very structured accountability program, right? There's yep, random drug testing, there's meeting requirements, there's behavior requirements,
curfews,
all kinds of stuff. And then there's just the last one, which is what you guys have brought up, is just a straight detoxing, where you're going into a hospital kind of facility. So ideally, somebody would have a combination of all three of these things, right? And that's kind of what you guys have created. This closed loop is you're providing this recovery housing portion of it, but you've created partnerships with other people to say, okay, this guy needs... getting locked down,
yeah,
right? Is that what the closed loop is?
It's level of care.
Yeah,
you know what's your current history and previous and current previous history.
Right.
All right, and then you tailor what you know their need. You know, you tailor the program. Okay. You know, the basic rules are the same.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and what they got to follow and stuff.
Right.
Okay, but you know, if you're just coming out of a detox, you're going to be treated very differently than somebody who came out of a 6-week
rehab.
And then again, you know, if they do relapse, and they do, we're not just going to put them out on the street. The street is the worst place for anybody to be under those conditions.
Mm.
Okay. Because your chances of recovery.
You can actually stop and say that again.
The streets are the worst place for anybody to be in early recovery.
Yeah.
Okay. You'll never make it.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, in my mind, if you have charges pending, jail's better.
I mean, I can honestly say, going to jail, I was rescued.
Well,
Yeah. You know? I mean, I can honestly say that. I mean, you know, who knows what can happen if I didn't get arrested?
Yeah.
You know, I could OD'd. I could have died. Who knows?
Yeah.
Actually, jail saved my life a lot of times.
Wow.
I can honestly say that today.
Yeah.
And I never looked at it in a positive way, you know?
Yeah, until now, you're looking back.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I talk to so many parents, and they tell me they cannot sleep at night. And then when their son or daughter is in jail, they say they can sleep at night.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing that they're safe.
Yeah.
It's not a good place to be, but at least I can go to bed at night knowing you're okay.
So, and I know this is true. I know a lot of parents dealing with this, and God bless them, this is a rough place to be. But if their child does get arrested, what do you recommend they do?
Different, I mean, different case for different case, you know?
Yeah. Some people, depends on what they've done.
What they've done. I mean,
what their history is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got a lot of repeat offenses and things like that, you know, we do take court mandated.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they haven't been, you know, completely honest, and they have more things hanging out there than
right.
We don't have.
You mean, wait, a drug addict was not completely honest?
You know, in that case, you know, jail time is the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, but we'll take them.
Yeah.
You know, once all that mess is straightened out in the court, you know, we'll take them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it's been plenty of nights when me and Paul were driving around till 2-3 o'clock in the morning to find a place, somebody to go take them somewhere to be safe, rather than being on the streets.
Yeah.
I don't want their blood on my hands.
Right.
If it takes me an extra hour. 2 hours, 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do what I have to do.
But when we look at the disease of addiction, we see all these behavioral problems. They're hard to get along with. They lie all the time, and so people want to write them off, right? They just, it's like it's too hard to deal with, and so thank God there's guys like you out there that are doing
it. It's not a moral issue, you know, and that's what you know, our 12-step. Stuff teaches us that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anybody that's devoid of the spirit has the capability of finding it and getting back.
This is a stat I found online. The average life of an opiate abuser is 10 years after their first use if they don't enter recovery. So once they start using, if no one goes and intervenes, it's difficult. And the people I've worked with, and I know in the 12 steps, if someone's not ready, there's not much you can do for that person, right?
That's right.
I mean, you can physically remove them from that situation. You can send them to a detox. You can send them to a rehab. And I've known counselors that have said that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? That they've had clients that come into their inpatient programs unwillingly, and they get a recovery. Because once they get removed from that situation, it can help. But it's not always the case. It's probably less the case in that situation, right?
I mean, depending upon the situation, like I said, you know, case-to-case basis. You know, in the about almost like 6 months ago, I had a parent come to me about their son. And in and out of jail, violation of probations. Mm-hmm. And he has never been introduced the basics of recovery.
Okay.
And she wanted to put him in the sober living.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could have said, okay, come here, let me fill the bed, let me get paid.
Right.
He'll probably last maybe 2 days, I'll take your money, and I'll fill that bed right up.
Right.
I'm not, like I said, I'm doing you an injustice.
Yeah.
And I told him, listen, I would love to have your son here, I would love to work with him, but he needs to go to rehab. Yeah. He needs to get the fundamentals and the basics of how to live about recovery before he comes to me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I said, it's, you know, a case-to-case basis. For myself, I had to hit a bottom that was no longer trapdoors in my bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, it's because, you know, my parents have dealt with me for a lot of years and basically rescued me from my bottom.
Right.
Put me in all kinds of rehabs, halfway houses. I wasn't ready until they said, you know what? We love you, but we don't like you. You got to go.
Right.
You gotta go.
Yeah.
And I had to live it like that. You know, I had to find my own way and my own guilt and shame of the wilderness that I wanted to live again.
Right.
You know? That's just from my bottom, you know?
Right.
Thank you.